Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcio Land Podcast. So today we have a pretty special program for you today. We're going to recap what happened in the Champions League for Italian clubs, which wasn't great. I recorded the game picks with Thousand Names live from Napoli. I think you guys will enjoy that. Then we have some superb Twitter questions, some really good ones today from our listeners. And we are going to close it out with our dear friend John Solano, because Roma always gives us stuff to talk about. But before we get to all this stuff, I am joined by our great friend, the producer, the co-host of the podcast, Alex Goldberg. You guys all know about his fantastic content on Twitter and YouTube. So, Alex, I'm going to ask you very simply, which elimination was more disappointing in your opinion? What we saw from Inter or Napoli?
Well, David, I would love to actually say both, because honestly, on a whole, they were both inexcusable in my opinion, but in their own ways. Now, opponent-wise, Napoli obviously had the tougher opponent in Liverpool, of course, and they were at Anfield. But then again, they just needed a draw, and they were really poor. I mean, they just weren't good. They should have lost by more. You and I even texted about it after the game. I mean, the amount of sitters that Liverpool missed at the end, Mane specifically, it was just embarrassing from Liverpool's standpoint, but even more embarrassing from Napoli's standpoint, because they just weren't good. They simply really didn't show up. So I think it was disappointing on their end just because of their performance. But I'm going to have to give the tiebreaker to Inter on this one, because I'm sorry, and I'm a fan, David, as you know, of the Eredivisie, but PSV had nothing to play for, and they couldn't get a win at home at the San Siro against PSV, and that honestly is just inexcusable. Whether you watched the whole game, you watched highlights, you didn't watch any of the game, you see that result, especially since Inter were losing for much of the game until Icardi scored. It's just inexcusable. Now, once again, I rate a Chucky Irving Lozano for PSV who scored the goal. I even like the guy who assisted him. They're fine players. But David, I even pointed out on the last episode that PSV, and I can tell by the lineup they put out, PSV did not even go full strength, because they're trying to win right now the Eredivisie. They're only 2 points ahead of Ajax. They didn't even give Inter their full strength lineup. Granted, they gave them some of their best players, but not even their full strength lineup, and Inter could not squeeze 3 points out. So both disappointing in their own right, but I gotta give Inter the award for more disappointing, just based on the opponent, the fact they were at home, and the fact that their opponent had nothing to play for. So tisk tisk for Inter, David. That's my opinion. What about you?
Yeah, I think I'm with you. And to add to it, you know, there was a lot of Inter fans who were concerned on how Barcelona would handle their match against Spurs. And I think everything considered, Barcelona did their part. Granted, they didn't win. You can't blame Barcelona for wanting to rest some of their players, but they did enough to help Inter. So, yeah, I mean, you look at Inter in typical Inter fashion, how crazy this Champions League run was for them. A, the way they qualified for this Champions League to begin with. They get the group. Pretty much everyone writes them off as not having a chance. They're able to win some matches in the last minute, especially that one against Spurs, the first one at San Siro, which in a lot of ways really should have set them up to qualify. Their big-name player, Icardi, had never played in the Champions League, was brilliant in the group stage. And as you said, they face a team with nothing to play for, and they can't win despite having 65,000 fans. And big credit to them, really trying to push them there. But also for Napoli, I was really, really disappointed in that performance. I think that scoreline should have been easily 3-4-0 to add insult to injury. It was really two former players, Roma players, which has become Napoli's big rival, that take them out. We had Salah with the goal, and now when Alisson with the very good save, although I will say I think the save's a little bit overrated, because to me it's more of a Milik miss than anything else. So that adds maybe a little bit more to the disappointment. The last thing I want to say, though, you know, for Napoli, I think the Europa League is really a great opportunity. I think Inter probably shouldn't go too hard in it. They need to secure a top four finish, which, you know, with Inter, you never know. You and I were sky high on them going into the season, but this could really take a turn for the worse. So I almost think Inter needs to really just focus on Serie A. Napoli, on the other hand, I think this is a great opportunity to get a title that can really elevate them. And Napoli also needs to do well in the Europa League for their ranking. So next year, when they're back in the Champions League, that they don't get such a tough group. So it's also interesting to me how different Napoli and Inter go into the Europa League. The last thing I want to ask you, Alex, on the Champions League stuff, we're going to get into Roma with John Solano at the end, but I just want to ask you about Juve. So, you know, they win the group, but they did lose their last two Champions League matches against Man United at home and against Young Boys. Do you think Juve fans should be concerned about this, or is this kind of like a fluke?
I really just think this is one of those moments you could be a prisoner of the moment. I really, now, first of all, before I excuse them and say everything is fine, I guarantee you Max Allegri still wants better performances, of course, even in these games. He's a true professional, and I think what makes him such a damn good manager is he does expect good performances no matter what the situation is. But with all of that said, David, no, not concerned one iota for Juventus. And I'm not concerned for two reasons. I'm not concerned because they're doing so well in Serie A that if they can more or less shut the door on Serie A halfway through the season, well, that really does allow them to put all of their eggs into the Champions League basket. And then I'm also not concerned because this is just such a veteran squad. This is a team that is not fazed by us overreacting about them not playing well in a couple moments. And this is a team that's heard it all. There's nothing they haven't heard in terms of people doubting them. I mean, David, I have to make a parallel right now to the New England Patriots. I really do. And yes, I'm doing it because I'm a huge New England Patriots fan, and you and I are both here in Boston and New England. But I always compare Juventus to the New England Patriots or Juventus to the Spurs. Either way, two teams in the Patriots and Spurs that are always good every year. And the Patriots, David, specifically, are famous for starting off slow. Throughout their first four games almost every season, they'll go like 1-3 or 2-2. And if you listen to the sports radio around here, the world is ending. The sky is falling. And then what happens by year's end? The Patriots are at worst 12-4, usually 13-3, might go on to win the Super Bowl. And it just seems laughable that we laughed at them in the beginning of the season. I think very much so. This is the same story with Juventus. Now, I know we're not in the beginning of the season, so yes, you could be a little bit concerned about this, but no, I'm not concerned at all. Soon enough, they will have won another Scudetto, and I think they're going to at least be one of the final four teams in the Champions League, so I am not concerned at all.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. To me, this was really fluky, because actually I have to say that match against Manchester United in Turin was one of the best performances Juve have had in the Champions League. And to me, the loss to Young Boys, I mean, Ronaldo had three or four pretty clear chances. I mean, what are the odds of him having another bad performance like that? So, yeah, this is a great opportunity for Juve fans, the ones who still hate Allegri and all, to vent and all. But I'm with you. I don't really see a reason to be worried. But I will say, those who hate both Juve and the New England Patriots, and there's a lot of them out there, when you brought up the comparison between the two of them, I'm sure some of our listeners thought they both cheat in the back of their mind. I don't think that, but that's how I'm sure some people think. So with that in mind, we're going to turn it over to our friend Thousand Names. We're going to do a game picks. I recorded this segment earlier. You're going to hear Thousand Names in all his glory. Okay. And tonight I have the pleasure of being joined by our Oracle in person. He's in Naples right now. I'm Boston, but I wanted him to connect on the podcast to do our predictions for the weekend. So, Thousand Names, benvenuto a Calcioland. Grazie mille che sei con noi stasera.
Hi, guys. Ciao a tutti.
Okay, so by now you guys know how this works. Thousand Names picks the three matches for us to make our predictions on. So he has the advantage of picking the games. I have the advantage of knowing what his picks are. So tonight I'm going to have 1,000 names, give his picks in Italian. I'll translate them to English, and then I'll make my pick. So 1,000, let's start with Inter, who are hosting Udinese at San Siro. Dacci il tuo pronostico per Inter-Udinese.
Inter-Udinese 5-0. Sbletta di Gardi, Brozovic, Perisic. Andanovic para rigore a De Paul. Già si vede la mano di Marotta. L'Udinese si scansa, che è una bellezza. San Siro omaggia gli eroi sfortunati della Champions. Fidatevi.
Okay, so in English, 1,000 has Inter defeating Udinese 5-0 with a hat trick by Cardi, goals from Brozovic and Perisic. The comment is that Handanovic is going to stop a DePaul penalty kick, and more importantly, that we are already starting to see the impact of Marotta at Inter. He was introduced today because Udinese, the fix is in. They're going to help Inter here, and San Siro is going to pay tribute to the heroes of the Champions League who just had bad luck. So my pick, this is a tough one, because Inter, their season could start going south if they don't win this match. Udinese has been a little bit better with Nicola as the manager, but I'm going to pick Inter as well, not as decisively. I'm going to have Inter 2-1. I'm going to have a goal for Lasagna, and I'm going to give a goal to Icardi and Kita Balde. So next match, 1,000 names, and all Juve fans are on pins and needles for your prediction of the Derby della Mole. So 1,000, dacci il tuo pronostico per Torino-Juventus.
Torino-Juve 3-2. Tripletta di Iago Falche, Bernardeschi e Alessandro. Matuidi è espulso. Seconda sconfitta di fila da quando Marotta è all'Inter. Malzasi umilia Allegri sotto tutti i punti di vista. Torino è stata e resterà granata.
Ma Fausen, ma Ronaldo sbaglierà un rigore anche in questa partita?
Glielo farà Filippo.
Ok, so from Fausen's prediction in English, Torino-Juve, he has it 3-2. Hat-trick by Iago Falche. Goals by Bernardeschi and Alessandro. 1,000 predicts that Matuidi is going to get a red card, and this is going to be the Juve's second loss in a row since Marotta joined Inter. They lost the young boys in the Champions League. He says that Mazzarri is going to humiliate Allegri in every possible way, and that the city of Turin is and will remain Granata. And for those of you that don't know, in the city of Turin, people from Turin tend to be Torino fans. So because 1,000 didn't say it, I had to check if he had Ronaldo missing a penalty kick. And of course he does, with Sirigu stopping it. So Torino's been pretty resurgent. They have a 4 games undefeated streak. I'm going to have it 1-1 because I think Juve, you know, might try to open up the league a little bit more. Torino in the derby usually does well. I'm going to have it 1-1, and I'm going to give Dybala a goal, and I'm going to have Zaza with the goal that Lex. So last game from 1,000 names, big match for Di Francesco. His job is on the line. We have Genoa traveling to the Olimpico to face Roma. So 1,000, dacci il tuo pronostico per Roma-Genoa.
Roma-Genoa 2-0. Kluivert, Zaniolo. Di Francesco esce dalla crisi con i ragazzini. Prandelli continua a fare brutte figure. Fidatevi.
Okay, so 1,000 has Roma beating Genoa 2-0. Goals by Kluivert and Zaniolo. And he said Di Francesco is going to get out of this crisis thanks to his young projects, and that Genoa's new manager, Prandelli, is going to continue to look bad in these matches. So this one's an interesting, really important match for Di Francesco. Genoa, I'm actually going to have this as a draw, 0-0. And this might cost, actually, if they don't win, I have a feeling this will cost Di Francesco's job. So to recap, 1,000 and I agree on Inter winning against Udinese. I have Torino Juve as a draw. He has Torino winning. I have Roma Genoa as a draw. And Thousand has Roma winning. So one of the other things I wanted to ask Thousand, and, you know, I think sometimes I don't, my translations of his predictions don't really pay justice to how great he is. For those of you that understand Italian or are learning Italian, you guys should definitely follow him on Twitter. His style is often imitated these days. But Thousand is not only a football expert and our oracle, he's also a big tennis expert. As a matter of fact, when I first started following him, I really enjoyed his predictions on Thousand Names. So I want you guys to get a taste of his knowledge on the sport. So I'm going to ask Thousand to give us his five best male tennis players of all time. So Thousand, stavo dicendo ai nostri listeners che sei un grande esperto di tennis. Ti piace molto fare classifiche di tutti i tempi. L'anno prossimo faremo la tua classifica dei migliori programmi televisivi. Ma dammi la tua classifica dei cinque giocatori di tennis più forti di tutti i tempi.
Roger Federer, Rod Laver, Novak Djokovic, Rafael Nadal, Bjorn Borg.
And there you have it. Thousand Names. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for all your predictions. I love that some of our listeners are tweeting at you when Ronaldo scores penalties. It makes my day. Grazie mille per tutti i tuoi contributi. Buon Natale. Ti aspettiamo l'anno prossimo.
Auguri a tutto il podcast. Un saluto dall'Italia.
Ciao, Thousand. Grazie mille.
Grazie a voi. Ciao, ciao.
And after Thousand Names, another great segment, and this is a courtesy of our fantastic listeners. You guys know to me the part of the podcast that I enjoy are the contributions from our listeners. So as always, send us questions on Serie A, transfers. I mean, January is really around the corners, TV, music, and film. By the way, next week we're going to have Andrew Barker back to talk about Inter and movies. So if you have good questions on movies, I can ask some to Andrew as well. But as always, please use the CalcioLand hashtag when sending us in questions. And which ones are we going to go over tonight, Alex? I know we have at least two or three really juicy ones.
Yeah, I chuckled at a few just reading them. But David, let's start off with this. Do you look at the Champions League results for Serie A teams as glass half empty or half full?
So here's the thing. I try not to be a prisoner of the moment. And I have to say, I'm going to go back to when the draw took place. I think a lot of people, including me, didn't give Napoli or Inter a lot of chances. I mean, Napoli had Liverpool and PSG, two teams that have winning the Champions League as a legitimate target for them. Inter was in the fourth pot. They get Barca and Spurs. PSV, you know, wasn't, you know, a throw-in, as we saw in the last match. So when I go back to the draw, I would say things, you know, you could say half full because both Inter and Napoli came closer. They went into the last match with a pretty good chance. But I have to say overall, considering how close we were to realistically having all four teams go through, it's kind of hard not to look at this as a disappointment. So, you know, let's see what happens in the next few rounds. But, you know, right now we once again have the storyline as Juve being a dominating team, Roma somehow finding ways to do well in the Champions League when we don't expect it. And it really would have been nice to have at least a third team go into the mix.
All right, David, next question. Do Napoli and Inter's eliminations make Roma's season look any better? Or is it just a matter of Roma's group being easier?
Yeah, I actually think it's a combination of the two. Look, you know, no doubt Roma had a much easier group than both Napoli and Inter. Even Real Madrid this season isn't the Real Madrid that we know. Roma, basically with the Russian team, they were competing for that second place. They get through. And look, in a lot of ways, because Roma and Napoli, so maybe you can say it looks better, but also because of the market pool, Roma ends up making quite a bit of money off the fact that Inter and Napoli were eliminated. The lesser the teams, the lesser they have to share in the pool of the Champions League money. But look, you know, realistically, had Roma been in Napoli or Inter's group, I don't think they would have done as well as those two teams. Actually, I'm fairly certain of that.
All right, David, how about this? Should Inter consider replacing Spalletti even if he finishes in top four but wins no trophies?
Well, this is a tough one. And look, you know, for me, it always goes back to what I say. It's very easy to sack the manager. It's a lot harder to find a better replacement. And today, Marotta was finally introduced as an Inter's new CEO. And, you know, he gave confidence to Spalletti. I mean, I guess what else is he going to say? So for me, it comes to, let's say Inter doesn't win the Europa League. Let's say they don't win the Coppa Italia. And even, you know, the Coppa Italia is a more important trophy for a team like, say, like Napoli and Roma, who don't have a big trophy case compared to Inter. But let's say Inter shot out of those and they finish in top four. So they get to the Champions League two seasons in a row, which, to be fair, was their goal going into the season. If you can get someone like Conte, Simeone, I think, yeah, it's a no-brainer. And to me, I would say that even if, say, Spalletti wins the Europa League, I would say to me, Conte and Simeone are clear upgrades. Now, you know, if you tell me they could bring in Mourinho, then I think that's a little bit more dicey. I'm not sure Mourinho is the same manager as when he won the treble with Inter. Serie A has changed a lot. But, you know, I think you can make a case there. I think anyone else, say they get an up-and-coming manager, I'm not sure I would make that move. But it's going to be interesting because right now Inter, to me, is really on the verge. You and I were very high going into the season, but we know how Inter are. I always like to use this analogy, like they could be entering their Britney Spears with a shaved head attacking an SUV with an umbrella part of their season where they just lose their mind out of the blue. So I think the next few matches are really important for them.
Amazing analogy, David. Amazing analogy. All right. I really enjoy this Twitter question. I don't know why. I just chuckle when I read it. Is Asamoah a spy in disguise? He cost Inter the match against Juventus and PSV.
Yeah, man. Also, to get this question on the day that Marotta is installed as CEO is pretty interesting. I mean, to be fair, the track record of former Juve folks at Inter isn't particularly great. Marcello Lippi, who won everything at Juve, was an absolute disaster at Inter. But I think Marotta is going to do well. Asamoah, look, to be fair, there were plenty of times at the beginning of the season where we had him in the winner column of our winners and losers on Mondays. I think we had him as a loser on a Monday. If we did a Champions League edition, I would have him as a loser. And look, he did cost them in big, big moments. He's not having a great moment in form for sure. I don't think he's a spy in disguise, but there seems to be something about that left back position at Inter where things just turn for the worse. But I'm an Asamoah guy. I still think he can turn it around, but I don't blame our listener for looking at it this way right now.
It was just well worded. All right, David, next Twitter question. Had Gattuso been a more cerebral player like, say, Pirlo or Xavi, would we look at him differently as a manager?
It's a very interesting question. When we were talking about Chiesa at Fiorentina, you know, I always wonder, you know, do we overrate him sometimes because his dad was a great player? And look, Gattuso, there are few players that are more identified with like a trait in their game than Gattuso was with the word grinta, and, you know, giving it all on the pitch. So, you know, what's interesting to me is that Gattuso, a lot of Milan fans, when he arrived, were expecting, oh, he's going to kick the players' asses. He's going to be a hard ass. He's going to be like a sergeant from Full Metal Jacket. But quite frankly, we really didn't see him. I'm going to say he's much more of a player's manager. The only time I really saw him, you know, publicly criticize players was Andre Silva last season, Bakayoko this season. It really worked with Bakayoko. So I think there's something to this. I think former players, in some instances, I think they get overrated as managers because we look at their traits as players. I think it's going to translate. Like, I think had Montella not been such a good striker, probably wouldn't have been hired in a lot of times. And I think for Gattuso, people identify him with that defensive mentality, the grit. And I'm not sure how fair that is. I would say I see a little bit more interesting tactical things from Gattuso than, say, Pippo Inzaghi, who was a great striker. So I definitely think there is something to this.
All right. How about this, David? Can Milan fans trust Donnarumma again?
Yeah, we talked about it on Monday. I actually think, except for the derby, which, look, you know, is a really important game, and I get why people remember that, I think Donnarumma's actually had a very good season. I mean, especially for Italy, he's been excellent. I think for Milan, save for that Inter match, overall, he's been quite good. So, I think, to me, Donnarumma's clearly a building block for Milan long-term. You know, we talked about Piperina on Monday. Like, he just only plays in the Europa League, and Milan was eliminated today. I think you're just going to keep seeing Donnarumma the rest of the way. And that's great. I think, you know, Donnarumma needs to improve still a little bit with his feet. It's a little bit better than before, but I think overall he's gone back to being the great shot stopper he was in his first season.
And that is very promising for Milan. All right, next Twitter question. Many coaches at the top Serie A teams are under pressure right now. Do you think it's justified right now? How many of them would win the Scudetto if they replaced Allegri at Juventus?
I love this question. And you know why I love this question, Alex? Because it reminds me of how much I despise people that bring up, oh, Sarri never won any titles. Yeah, I mean, you really think Juve didn't have something to do with this? And this was even, you know, Spalletti at Roma. Like, you know, there's only one team that can win the title. And there's plenty of managers that I think are really, really good that if you swap them for Allegri, would have the opportunity to win. Now, I think Allegri is particularly adept to being at a top, top club like Juve, because it's not just, you know, the tactics, the game management. It's also managing the media, managing big egos. And I think Allegri is really good at that. So, you know, other managers, it's not a given. Like, we can say, okay, they're great tactically. They rotate well. They'll be fine. I think for a club like Juve, there's a little bit more to it. But I think it's just too easy to write off other managers by saying they don't win when their biggest misfortune is being in a league like Juve. As far as, you know, the current managers, I think there's no doubt you put Ancelotti on this Juve, he's going to win. I think Spalletti, pretty good chance. Interestingly, Spalletti, there was a period where he was a candidate for Juve job, and Andrea Agnelli met with him and didn't think he was an ideal fit. And I could kind of see the personality of Spalletti maybe being an issue, but tactically, I think he would do very well. The other ones, I think, you know, it's up for debate if they have all the attributes needed for him, but it certainly would be interesting.
That was a very good question. Let's move on to another one. Who could hypothetically replace Allegri at Juventus? And what are the odds we see Zidane managing in Serie A?
Okay, so the second part of the question to me is the answer for the first. These were two separate questions, and I combined them. I actually, you know, I think Allegri is going to stay at Juve for a while. I think they really see, like, a great cycle. I don't want to jinx it. Say they win the Champions League this season, maybe Allegri would go. But I think he's going to stay regardless a few more seasons. But if he were to leave, I think Zidane would be Juve's top choice. Juve typically goes for Italian managers. They made an exception with Deschamps. Granted, that was the year they were relegated, but Deschamps had that Juve DNA. Zidane was actually one of his teammates at Juve, and Zidane really checks all the boxes for Juve. Top-level managers, knows how to manage big egos. And I think in a lot of ways, Zidane's brand really went up when we saw Real Madrid, you know, struggles. Granted, Ronaldo isn't there. He'd be reunited with him at Juve. So if I had to guess, I would say Zidane. You know, it's interesting. This time last year, we were talking about Simone Inzaghi as a potential replacement for Juve. When you look at this season and all his complaining, would Juve fans really want him? So I would say right now, Zidane, and it would be great to see him in Serie A at some point.
Listen, real quick, I know that Eden Hazard is constantly talking about Real Madrid. But if Zidane took over Juventus and Eden Hazard decided that he'd rather follow his childhood idol rather than his childhood favorite team, I'm all in on Juve, baby. Just saying that now. All right, let's move on, David. This is a good one. Who is more clutch for Juventus, Mario Mandzukic or Carlos Tevez?
Great question. So I'm gonna give you a cop out answer, but I think this makes sense. I think Tevez and Serie A was incredibly clutch. And look, I think Tevez is a better player than Mandzukic. It's close, but I think Tevez is better. I mean, I think Tevez, when he was at Juve, it was between him and Higuain as the best player in Serie A. But I will say in the Champions League, Mandzukic is much more clutch than Tevez. And even when Tevez arrived at Juve, they were question mark, is he really going to be able to elevate them in the Champions League? And the year that Juve went to the final with Tevez, it was really Morata who was scoring the goals. And man, that feels like a lifetime ago when you look at Morata now. So I'm going to say Mandzukic in the Champions League, without a doubt. We all know big game Mario. I mean, to me, it's absolutely insane that there are still some Juve fans that question him. And look, you know, at the end of last season, I thought maybe Mandzukic's best days were behind him, but he's been absolutely sensational after the World Cup. So I'm going to say more clutch Mandzukic. In Serie A, though, Tevez more impactful.
Tevez was pretty sensational when he was on Juventus, for sure. All right, David, how about this? How would you describe Genoa striker Kouame?
Yeah, so he's been in the headlines a lot, both for his play and also because he's a target for a lot of teams in Serie A right now. So I asked once again, or my great friend in Genoa, who covers Sampdoria and Genoa for Di Marzio site, as well as Sky Sport, my friend Marco Bovicelli, who gave us a great scouting report on Sampdoria center back Anderson. And he said, once again, the word that comes to mind when thinking of Kouame is veloce, which means fast in Italy. And he says it's not only his ability on the pitch, like he's super fast, which makes him really dangerous on the counterattacks, but also his speed at adapting to Serie A. Because he points out that Kouame played for Cittadella in Serie B last season, had shown some flashes. He arrives in Serie A, and he was overshadowed by Piontek at the beginning. Piontek got off to that sensational start. But actually, I think in the past 6 weeks or so, Kwame's been better. And I've had to tell you, if you had to tell me which of these two players would I rather have at a big club, I might go with Kouame. The other thing that Marco points out is that another thing that really helps Kouame is his disposition. Like, he's always smiling, always positive, feels very grateful for the opportunities that he has. So he said it's both his speed on the pitch and at adapting. His personality is very well suited. And he also gives us a couple of tidbits on the transfer market. He said Napoli have already inquired about him, as well as Milan and Roma. And Roma's trying to beat everyone to him, since not only did they talk to Genoa, they also talked to his agent. Marco says, though, he's not quite sure Genoa will let him go in January, especially now that they're not doing so well in the standings. So, as always, thank you, Marco. Kouame, definitely a player to watch. I'm sure you'll be reading a lot about him on Di Marzio's site in January.
Very interesting. All right, David, next Twitter question. Frosinone, Bologna, and Chievo are not equipped for Serie A, and it seems that every year we have 2 to 3 teams that fall into this category. Should Serie A move back to being an 18-team league?
It's a good question, and I've been a proponent of this for a while. But the other hand, like, I'll give you this. The fact that there are 20 teams, like, look at Frosinone. They were in Serie A, went back down, they came back up. Can we expect them maybe to be better this season because they had a previous experience in Serie A? So maybe there's something to be said about that. And look, the other two teams that our listener mentions, Bologna and Chievo, they've been in Serie A for a while, and they're just taking a turn for the worse now. I think Bologna is going to be pretty aggressive in the January transfer window to avoid this. So let's see what happens. But I do think in general in Serie A, it feels like the race to avoid relegation, two teams, it's pretty obvious who they're going to be. And then it's down to the third one. And that's kind of like a problem. But I also can see why the league's thinking is like, okay, if someone comes up to Serie A 1 year, they gain some experience. And also having more teams in Serie A allows us to have great storylines like Parma making it back up. So I can kind of see the pros and cons to both, but I do think it would make the league more competitive to have 18.
All right, David, last Twitter question. I'm very interested in this one. Could you please shed some light on the rumors linking Barella and Dries Mertens to Chelsea?
Okay, so I did a little bit of research on this. Let's start with Barella. So we've talked about Barella being scouted by Arsenal in the past. This week, I've been getting a lot of tweets from Chelsea fans on him. I did a little bit of research. At this moment in time, there's nothing concrete to this. Maybe that'll change. But as of now, there's nothing. What's interesting about Cagliari, Barella's current club, you know, I was thinking in recent years, they are a club that has sold the big name in the January window relative to their standards. But he was a big name, period. They sold Raja Nainggolan a few years ago during the January window. But that was a little bit different. A, Cagliari had a different president. We still had Cellino there. Now we have another president. Cagliari was in a better position in the standings. Nainggolan, I think, had just a year and a half left on his contract. They kind of had to cash in on him. They actually didn't get a great return on him because of that reason. But their window for selling him was closing rather quickly. Now Cagliari's still in that race to avoid relegation. They have Barella under a long-term contract. He's a homegrown player. I'd be pretty surprised if they sell him in January. And to be honest, I think he's more realistic for Serie A club. I could see Inter and Milan going after him in the summer. I like Barella a lot, but I'd be concerned for a player like him joining Chelsea mid-season with Sarri. We know how he is about integrating new players. So as of now, it would surprise me. Let's see what happens. Now to Mertens, and this applies to Koulibaly as well. We talked about him on Monday. What I personally hate are the transfer rumors that get, you know, generated in a lot of ways by, like, events that maybe have very little to do with, you know, the history of the club. So Napoli gets eliminated in the Champions League. A lot of people are tweeting at me, oh, does this change your mind because Napoli's out, that they'd sell Koulibaly? They can't win the Serie A title. They're in second place. Why would he want to stay there? They can't win anyways. If you know anything about Napoli, you know they don't give up their players easily at all. Koulibaly loves it there. And I think, and we talked about it at the top, like Napoli actually, I think this season's really motivated to win the Europa League. In the rankings, when Benitez was there, they made the semifinal of the Europa League. They're going to lose those points in the rankings because a lot of time passed since then. So they are extra motivated for this. And so I think a lot of what we said about Koulibaly completely applies to Mertens as well. He's another player that loves it at Napoli, had opportunities to leave in the past, then push to move. And I think Napoli still has a good amount at stake. So as of now, I'd be surprised as well. Like we talked on Monday, it's not really the most exciting name. You know, the one that I think could see not leaving Napoli for Chelsea or Premier League team is Hizaj. Both interesting, both Hizaj and Mertens have exit clauses. But as part of the deal between Sarri, Chelsea and Napoli, if Chelsea wants a Napoli player, they can negotiate for them. They just can't use the clause. So as of now, I'd be surprised if Mertens leaves. So as always, we love getting questions on transfers. If you have more questions on Serie A, send them our way. The pop culture ones as well. So thanks to our listeners for our support. I really want to thank those that have left us reviews, those who tweet about the podcast. Not only do you help us co-write the show with your questions, you're also our marketing department. So we're going to close it out with our interview with our regular guest, John Solano. I feel like he's a permanent cast member like you and I, Alex, because there's always so much to talk about Roma, and we'll chat with you guys on Monday. So there's never a dull moment with Roma, and this is why I feel that John Solano, our guest today, is such a frequent contributor to our podcast, because with Roma, the storylines never end. You guys by now have heard John many times on the podcast. He runs the brilliant AS Roma Press website, where there's a lot of exclusive content. He also has a great podcast. If you enjoy John's appearances on Calcioland, definitely check that out. So, John, once again, you're on Calcioland. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. Glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
Cool. So let me take you back to the end of the Rudy Garcia era, because I saw one of your Twitter followers sent you like a good comment how there are, you know, some parallels to what's happening with Di Francesco. Manolas' quotes after yesterday's match were, you know, interesting to say the least. So you've covered both these phases in Roma's history. Tell me a little bit, which parallels do you see between the two?
Yeah, they're pretty similar. And it's pretty clear that both are happening right around the same time. It's happening to managers who, frankly, haven't been at the club very long. This happened the end of Garcia. He was 2.5 years in, whereas this time with DiFrancesco, it's 1.5 years in where they start running into some trouble. And the problems that are evident on the pitch are pretty much the same. Under Garcia, they couldn't win whatsoever. They were drawing multiple matches. They were dropping points to small sides, especially in attack. They had nothing going, very, very stagnant. That's very similar to what Roma are now. Under Di Francesco, the attack is extremely stagnant. They have no reference point because Edin Dzeko is out due to injury. Now, the more worrying part under Di Francesco is the defense. Last season, they could win matches 1-0. They would drop points when they, you know, they dropped points where there were some matches where they couldn't even score. But the defense last season under Di Francesco was at least a reference in their strong point, whereas this season, it's without question the weakest area of the pitch. And in both of these instances under Garcia and Di Francesco, you could just tell the play, the style of play, the approach, the formation, it's all wrong. And you have a manager who is unwilling to deviate from a clearly broken system. So the parallels are very strong and, frankly, extremely worrying.
Absolutely. So when Rudy Garcia was sacked, there was kind of a manager in waiting that checked a lot of boxes in Luciano Spalletti. It really wasn't a big surprise when he was hired. He had experience at the club before. He was a name that would energize the fans. Now, you know, it's a little bit different. There has been some buzz on supposedly Totti reaching out to Conte, but this, you know, something you've pointed out, just the money alone makes this really problematic, and it really seems like Conte wants to wait out the end of the year. And in general, I could just imagine Conte at a press conference after Roma sells a big name player. So tell me a little bit what the buzz is, who Di Francesco's potential replacement could be, because I got to be honest, at this point now, it just feels like a matter of time because the team's been on retreat twice during the season. There's really not much left. So short of Roma having a great turnaround, at this point, it's such a matter of time. Who do you see as potential candidates?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the retreat. I had to go back in time and think about it. I couldn't think of another instance where Roma were in ritiro twice within the first 3 months of the season. What's been happening is unprecedented, how bad they've been. But the name I keep coming back to, and you mentioned it, is Conte. Now, part of me thinks that within the last 24 hours, some things may have changed because, you know this very well, Marotta obviously being unveiled at Inter. I have a feeling that if they continue to struggle in the manner that they are, you would have to think that they're looking at Conte as well. So part of me thinks maybe Roma will get a bit of a sense of urgency, so to speak, if it were to come to sacking Di Francesco. I completely agree with you. I think the writing is on the wall. I think even if they beat Genoa at the weekend, that the problems are just too far deep to dig their way out of it. And I've talked about it before with you at length about just how fragile Roma are financially. And missing out on the Champions League would just be devastating. So I think their hand is almost going to be forced because they can't continue like this. But as you mentioned, the options are pretty spare. I can tell you unequivocally that Roma president Palotta really, really likes Conte. He likes him a lot. Now, whether the rumors of De Rossi or Totti having reached out to Conte are true or not, I I have my doubts about that because both of them are actually quite close with DeFrancesco. So I don't know if they would really go behind their friend's back, you know, just to reach out to a manager who may or may not even come. So beyond Conte, the options are just sort of depressing. As you mentioned, when it was Garcia, they at least had Spalletti waiting in the wings, essentially. I mean, Palotta was meeting with Spalletti in Miami while Garcia was still the manager. So it was a much different situation then. I mean, the names that are out there are, again, Paulo Sousa, who I don't think would excite many people. Some people have even suggested Derossi Sr., who is the manager of the Primavera of Roma, taking over for DeFrancesco, which would just, in my opinion, be even worse than having DeFrancesco at the helm. So to me, I think right now it truly is a race for Conte because, again, I think Marotta being appointed officially at Inter really changes things. And with Roma's progression in the Champions League, they at least have these funds coming in, especially when you consider the eliminations of Napoli and Inter. So I do think Roma are going to make a really strong push for Conte, although it does seem like he would prefer to be appointed in the summer at any club. I just think it's a matter of time before the two clubs I mentioned just start going all out for him because there's not a lot out there. The options are very, very slim, very slim.
That's for sure. And yeah, as you mentioned, you did great work on the revenue side, what Roma earned with the elimination. Definitely check out John's Twitter page and IS Roma Press. There's a lot of great details there. So now let's talk about DeFrancesco's boss, Monchi. And I feel in a lot of ways, Roma fans seem to be more upset with him than DeFrancesco. And I personally could see that angle. So let me ask you flat out, you know, if DeFrancesco gets sacked, and both you and I think it's a matter of time, then really the spotlight goes on him. If you had to bet today, is Monchi going to be Roma's sporting director for the summer transfer window going into next season?
I would say almost undoubtedly. I mean, if I had to put money on it, I would say it almost like 90% that he would remain the sporting director. Even if he were to want to quit, Palotta loves him. They're much closer, those two, Monchi and Palotta, than Palotta ever was with Sabatini. And
interesting.
There was a point where, I don't know if you recall, but Sabatini even handed in his resignation and Palotta rejected it. So even if Monchi was to say, hey, I'm done here, I want to quit, I don't think Palotta would even accept his resignation. So he has another two and a half years of contract left with Roma. I believe it runs, if I'm not mistaken, it runs until the summer of 2020. So I really don't see any way that he would not be the sporting director at Roma in the summer. It would have to take something much more drastic than DeFrancesco being sacked. I think it would take something a lot deeper than that. Because as I said, Palotta, Monchi are very, very close. I don't want to say they're like great friends, but they have a much deeper relationship than, again, Sabatini ever had with Palotta. Monchi visits him quite often in America. He's going in like 3 or 4 days to meet with him. They have a very close relationship. So I don't see that happening unless, of course, something far deeper than sacking a manager happens.
Interesting. So let's talk about a couple of players that have piqued my interest. And the first one is Patrick Schick. We've talked about him in the past. I felt that, you know, now he has this opportunity with Zeko hurt, you know, to have a chance. It doesn't really seem so far he's made the most of it. So tell me, if a new manager were to come in, do you think that could be the spark that gets him going? I mean, Roma invested so much in him that they really need to get him going. Do you have hope if a new manager comes in that it could happen?
I honestly don't. And I don't like saying that But I think he is the perfect example of one of those players where the environment at Roma, and you've talked about it at length on your podcast, how the environment has sort of just chewed this guy and spit him out. He lacks so much confidence in himself, and you can see it on the pitch. He just looks so dismayed at times when things aren't going his way. Now, he's shown some flashes here and there, and he is going to continue to get a stretch of matches here because, as you mentioned, Dzeko is out. But I believe he only has 4 goals and since he arrived at Roma. And he just – nothing seems to be going right for him. And I think more of that has to do with the environment because, again, it's a very difficult place to play, maybe one of the most difficult in all of Italy. When you have that price tag of most expensive player slapped on you and you have that title slapped on you before you even step foot onto the pitch, I just think you're at such a huge disadvantage, especially for a guy who, he had a great season at Sampdoria. I don't think anybody will forget that. But, I mean, not like he was playing at a high level in Europe for, you know, several years. Roma had bought him just after one season, and it was, you know, he was primarily a bench player. He was coming off the bench at Sampdoria. So I think it was, for him, it's a case of ascension far too quickly. And I just think he's one of those guys that he needs confidence. He needs to feel the support. He needs to feel the trust of the manager, of the fans. And I think he's going to be one of those cases where he has to leave Roma, as much as I don't want him to, and I do think he'll be successful wherever he goes. I just don't think it's going to happen for him here.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. I mean, I think the talent is there, but also, you know, it was a small sample size at Sampdoria. Also, I feel that because he was coming off the bench, the other Serie A managers didn't know that much about him. I feel like now, on top of the confidence issue, which I'm with you, is definitely the case, and there's no place with more pressure than Roma in Italy. So, but I also think, you know, maybe he's getting a little bit exposed. But let's talk about a player who's actually doing quite well, at least scoring-wise, in the Champions League, and this is Under. There's been some buzz on Arsenal scouting him multiple times. I know you've written about this too. I don't personally think he's having a particularly good season, but he is scoring some big goals at the right time. So give me your assessment to what he's done so far this season, and what have you heard transfer-wise with him?
Yeah, it's been the same thing. Arsenal were at the Olympico for the match against Inter. So they're making their interest known. He's one of those guys where I don't think he should make the leap so soon. Now, granted, Arsenal or not, Manchester City or Manchester United, who I do think would be a much bigger step for him. I have some serious doubts as to whether or not he can make that jump to the Premier League. He's not like Salah, where he has all the tools to, you know, that are just transferable throughout each league. He's quick. Physically, he is not anywhere near what Salah was. Consistency-wise, that's his biggest problem. As you mentioned, this season, he's really, really struggled. The problem with him, too, he really drifts in and out of matches at times. He looks disinterested at some moments, won't track back to help in defense at times. And that's negatively affected Roma quite often this season. So if I were him, I would remain for at least another season, which always seemed to be the plan anyway. I mean, obviously, when he had the big season last year, it was almost, you know, it was written in the stars that he was going to be sold, frankly, especially with Monchi at the helm. So he struggled this season. If I were a big club, I mean, some of the prices we've seen rumored 40, 50, 60 million. My jaw drops when I see things like that. he's only got 3 or 4 league goals this season, and it might even be lower than that. So it's difficult because I can understand that, you know, you're going to have an English club approach him and they will undoubtedly offer higher wages than what Roma would be able to. So I can understand from his standpoint, that's certainly tempting. But if I were him, I would continue the path at Roma just because, again, I think he's one of those guys that he needs more consistency, needs more continuity. And I think, again, if he were to go to the Premier League with that big price tag on him, it's I think too much would be expected of him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you that for him, another season at Roma is ideal. But if Roma can get Salah money for him, I would pull the trigger on that one.
Oh, so would I. Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm with you. Better for him to stay. So now, speaking of Roma transfers, you mentioned the defense is a huge weak area. I think they've given up goals, and now 9 matches in a row. Manolas, to me, is really the only defender I would say is above average, and maybe this isn't even his best season so far. Do you expect Roma to make any moves to shore up the defense during the January transfer window?
I do. I don't know any name that they're looking at. Monchi just made a trip to Belgium and the Netherlands. He went on a short weekend scouting trip, and some of the names emerged, but none of them were defenders. They were mostly midfielders that could play alongside Steven Nzonzi. I think their defense is just so bad this season. It's, you know, a lot of people criticized Monchi for selling Nainggolan, selling Strootman, Allison, and I don't even think those were his worst moves. I think his worst pieces of business were not bringing in another defender and, quite frankly, a better alternative to Kolarov, because Fazio has been terrible. Kolarov, I can't even explain what has happened to him. I mean, he was by far the best left back in Serie A last season by a pretty big margin, in my opinion.
Yeah.
This season, he's unrecognizable. He can barely run. Obviously, age certainly has something to do with it. He played a ton of matches last season, and it's just seeing what has happened to the Roma defense in a matter of months is entirely confusing. As you mentioned, Manolas has nobody to play alongside him. I think they were hoping that Ivan Marcano would fill the shoes of being, you know, that alternative to Fazio. He's been terrible. Roma haven't won a single match with him on the pitch. He played yesterday in the Champions League, and that was another loss with him on the pitch. Juan Jesus has been horrific as well, not nearly as bad as Fazio, but it's a big, big, big problem because Manolas, frankly, is the only defender of any worth right now at the club. If I were them, I would bring in 2 central defenders just because Juan Jesus and Fazio have been that bad, but I don't expect that. So I do think that they'll look to bring in a defender in January. I don't know which way they're looking, because by all accounts and from what I'm hearing, they're not going to be big spenders in January. They do want to bring in somebody. I don't know. I'm very skeptical as to how much of an impact the player they get makes.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. And I think anyone who's still you can criticize Monchi for a lot of things, but not that Nainggolan deal, because as it stands right now, that looks like an absolute home run.
Of course.
I never felt it was such a great deal for Inter as Twitter put it out to be. But I got to say, so far, it looks even worse than what I thought. And while we're on the subject, what do you think of Zaniolo? You like what
I was just going to ask you, because, I mean, I'm at the point where I would much rather see Zaniolo playing on a weekly basis than I would Pastore. Because Pastore, he's been injured 3 times this season. I believe he's made only 6 or 7 appearances. I could be wrong on that. He's played pretty poorly. He hasn't really shown much. Zaniolo was the best player on the pitch against Inter. Should have had a penalty awarded we all know what happened there. I think he's been fantastic. And I know Monchi got a lot of stick, as you just mentioned, for that deal. It's difficult for me to comprehend how Inter could have let Zaniolo go. It's almost as if he was treated as a throw-in in that deal, but he's been incredible, absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I'm not one to get excited with prospects at all. I'm usually the other way around, but that kid has the it factor. That was an absolute steal for Roma. And actually, right now, I think you can almost make a case that Nainggolan deal is the best deal Monchi has done.
I completely agree. And
yeah. Go ahead.
I just I don't know. You and I agreed on this, I believe, but I thought when they sold Nainggolan, I was adamant that he only had 1 to 2 top seasons left in him. Because again, he makes no secret. He loves the nightlife. He loves to drink. He loves to smoke. He's not the greatest professional. I think a lot of Roma supporters loved him just because he loved the city. He loved the club. Yep. He hated Juve. And I think they were more upset to see him go because of those factors as opposed to his actual play on the pitch. Because, I mean, the drop-off that he had from 2016 to 2017, from 2017 to 2018, was like a mammoth. It was massive. And a lot of that, yes, certainly has to do with going from Spalletti as a manager to Di Francesco. But, I mean, even this season, he's played very sparingly. He's had injuries. He hasn't looked great even when he's been on the pitch. I thought it was a smart move, and I don't know how much you could still receive criticism for that.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I think he's the typical player whose reputation, you know, exceeds his ability and all. And look, you know, he might make me look really bad in a few months, but right now, on the day that it happened, it felt pretty good for Romana. So let's close on this. We talked a little bit about Palotta. He's going to meet with Monchi here in Boston on Monday. You know, there's been some buzz that he might be selling the club to some Middle Eastern investors. You know, the uncertainty with the stadium, the uncertainty with the Champions League has brought this to the forefront. So what have you heard and what do you expect to happen with Palotta Roma?
I don't think he will sell whatsoever. I think it's all rumors and innuendo. A lot of these rumors always emerge during critical phases of getting these portions passed for the Stadio della Roma. It's always interesting timing. I won't say it's him leaking things, but I do think the club sort of puts things out there to put pressure on the city to get this moving. Within the next month, I think we'll see some more movement on the stadium. It's currently being reviewed by the city of Rome right now, and they expect an update within the next 30 to 60 days. And I think by him putting that out there, he wants to put pressure on the city to get this, you know, let's pick this up, because it's been a number of years. Not a single shovel has been put into the ground. And the bureaucracy is just holding this up. So I think these rumors conveniently emerge when he wants the city to again, get a move on with getting the process taken care of. So, no, I don't think he will sell the club at all.
I certainly hope that's the case. So, John, I can't thank you enough for coming. I would normally wish you happy holidays because I'm not sure if we'll speak before Christmas and New Year's. But with Roma, you never know. We might have some breaking news where we'll need you to come back on. In the meantime, everyone check out. I mean, I really mean that John's work on AS Roma Press is tremendous. It isn't just a news aggregator site. Like, there's a lot of you know, unique content and a lot of great stuff. So if you love Roma and you want to read it in English, listen to a podcast in English. John's your guy. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. And happy holidays to you, David. I appreciate it.